Thank you for downloading the podcast. It's a Cinderella special today. My guests were Kenneth Branagh and Helena Bonham Carter. When I met Helena, I asked her what initially attracted her to the role.
Well, in all honesty, my ex-boyfriend asked me and I thought it would be really nice to see him again. And we had a lot to catch up on. So I thought, well, I'm going to be paid to do it. And it was only a week's work. And I thought, well, it's going to be fun. And I get wings and a wand. So I thought it was a bit of a no-brainer.
Well, you talk about wings and the wand. I mean, that takes me on to that fabulous frock that you wear.
I saw Sandy, and I've worked with Sandy, and she did practically have a nervous breakdown over it. Because you have to sort of fulfil every little six-year-old's dream.
Of course.
And how do you do that and not disappoint them? First of all, I did point out you do have to have wings. I had to have wings.
So you specified that was a stipulation.
There was no wing at all on the first sketch. In fact, the first rough thing, well, I walked in and I was like, oh, I'm going to be a fairy. No one's going to believe that I'm a fairy unless I have wings. There was a memo that went around, she wants wings. And then I was granted them. But it is, the dress speaks volumes. In fact, the volumes, I had something like 134, some ridiculous 137 yards of fabric. Oh, I had 400 LED lights. I was like a walking lamp, actually.
And how did they light up? Did you have some kind of battery?
I had a man underneath me and he turned me on. I
oh,
had
wonderful.
A switch. I did. And he had to crawl under. And I had about 40 AA batteries in my bustle. I could have, you know. In fact, Floris could have stayed there. He was a young Belgian who came from Belgium, who works for Philips. And he could have stayed underneath the skirt for the whole performance and you wouldn't have noticed. I was about 4 foot wide in diameter.
Astonishing.
No, much more, actually. My wingspan was about 6 foot. And it was a piece of architecture, that dress.
Very much so. But what about the logistical problems? Because acting and moving in a dress like that must
yes,
be really
well, Sandy
difficult.
Hadn't thought about that it actually had to be a working dress. You know, and by the time we actually gotten dressed too, both me and Lily, and particularly in the blue dress that me as a fairy godmother conjure up, because I'm sort of, as a fairy godmother, I'm part designer, we really couldn't function very well at all. We got the giggles. You do when you're sort of suffering from low oxygen
sure.
levels due to corset, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning. And we couldn't really function very well, but we rallied through.
Well, you certainly did. I mean, yep. I think the scenes with the two of you together, I mean, really come alive. It looks to me as if you're having a tremendous amount of fun.
We did have a lot of fun, but it wasn't as easy. I mean, it's no great sob story. I was paid a lot of money to have fun. But at 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, it's a night shoot. I hadn't thought of that. When you read a script, you don't immediately think, I'd forgotten that, of course, she appears at night. That's her whole... You know, and she never gets to go to the ball. It's a one-scene wonder. There's an added pressure, though, also, which I basically wore as the character, which is when you come in and you have to do a very small part, I find it more difficult to act instantly because there's no warm-up time. You can't sort of by week three find the character. You've got to find it, you know,
instantly, yes.
By, you know, day one, preferably the first take.
Well, that's quite a lot of pressure.
So I thought, well, actually, as a fairy godmother, there's a lot of pressure. Because if you are a fairy godmother, when you arrive on the scene, your ward or your guardian expects you to fix everything. So I thought, well, where the pressure? And she's got a deadline.
Yes.
A big deadline. And I thought, well, this is the very thing that I'm going to function. So it was a sort of, it was like, there was also a phrase that I'd come across that week, which was, if you stumble, make it part of the dance. And I thought there is something about that that suited her.
Yes.
And there's so much that's legendary about the fairy godmother. She comes up with all those icons, the glass slipper, the pumpkin, the midnight, you know, thing. And I just suddenly thought, maybe it's all an accident. You know, maybe it's like the great inventions, they were discovered by accident, like penicillin. I thought the midnight thing is actually, it's a flaw in her magic. She has a sell-by date magic. You know, it's a flaw. She's flawed. And then the glass slipper. I mean, who would have thought... You don't think of glass
of course,
as a natural
exactly.
material. So she tries to sell it to her Cinders. It didn't mean to come out glass. Of course, it was meant to be leather and whatever, or silk.
But that makes her very endearing because she is
perfection
inept.
Is so completely overrated. We all got to get, you know, I don't know why we strive for it because it's so overrated.
And
it's so irritating.
To achieve anyway.
It's impossible and it's frankly irritating.
Yes.
So I went full for the imperfection. That was the main idea, the
yes,
gist.
But...
It's accidental. Accidental inspiration. But good luck to wearing a glass slipper.
A Golden Childhood from the new Disney film Cinderella, composed by Patrick Doyle and performed by the London Symphony Orchestra. Thank you for joining me, Charlotte Green, in the Culture Club on Classic FM this afternoon. When I met Helena Bonham Carter recently to find out more about her role as the fairy godmother, playing opposite Downton Abbey's Lily James as Cinderella, I asked if she'd got to work with other members of the cast.
I just met Lily. Just met my fairy godchild, and I didn't meet anybody else. No, it's a bit isolating. You don't get to go to the ball, you don't get to do anything. You just hang around. You have to get there, get it all right, get her there on time.
And what about the makeup? I mean, because, of course, when we first see her, I mean, you're unrecognisable and she's incredibly wizened.
Yes, I love that.
How long did that take to?
Well, sadly, that took much less long than... In the script, it says, you know, a 1,000-year-old woman appears, and it took me less long to look 1,000 years than it took to make me look like the fairy godmother in her, you know, sort of archetypal look. There's a funny story behind that, because they said, oh, I wonder what you're going to look like when you're really, really old. And I said, well, Mum's around, she's 80. And so they took a face cast. Of course, she doesn't actually look 80 when they actually took that. So she can't be 80. I said, well, she is actually. And then they added some wrinkles. So that's actually a cast on my mum's face on top of mine.
That's quite intriguing, actually.
Which is, particularly if you're Ken and you're an ex-boyfriend and you're faced with your ex, sort of... So anyway, no, it was. But in fact, it doesn't look like Mum, because also Mum is... It looks much younger, but it was. She's got a much bigger upper lip than me. I mean, I think it's called philtrum. I don't know.
This bit.
You can't really see it on the radio. Okay?
No,
that's the whole point. The distance between your nose and your upper lip.
I think
it's called a philtrum.
I think you're right.
It might be, but her philtrum's much bigger than mine. I mean, longer. And so when it came to drinking the milk, I genuinely kept almost in my mouth, and so. That was not a deliberate joke. There was one take where Lily was so in corpsing, and I could hear Ken corpsing. It would just ruin the take. And I couldn't understand why, because I thought I was doing seriously good acting.
Exactly.
But I was covered in milk. Dribbling.
Did the fairy tale Cinderella, did that appeal to you as a small child? Or not? You may have been a tomboy. I don't know.
I was a tomboy. I was. Yes, it did. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember. It's so long ago. But but it's so it's so ingrained, Cinderella. You think
it is pretty much, isn't it?
It is in our DNA. And there. But what was so? You know, you always think of the happy ending. You meet your prince, and that's just. And you go like, oh God, it's just so not true. And we're all going to get disillusioned and disenchanted in life. But what they don't. Point out, and I'd forgotten really, was how much sadness she has to withstand, and the loss of both parents. There's so many parents dying. I mean, you forget in fairy tales how much death there is, and it's actually quite a good. It's a wonderfully, it's apt to every age you're in that you have a choice in life when you have sadness, which you'll inevitably meet in life. How you go, whether you diminish and get embittered or. Or that you keep your heart open and you grow and you evolve.
Part of Patrick Doyle's gorgeously romantic score for the new Cinderella film. That piece is called Who Is She? And is performed by the London Symphony Orchestra. And I'll play more music by Patrick after 4 on Classic FM, when you can hear my conversation with the film's director, Kenneth Branagh. Cinderella's character, as portrayed in the film, was surprisingly moving. There's an authentic goodness to her, which manages to be wholesome but not saccharine, something I mentioned to the fairy godmother herself, Helena Bonham Carter.
I didn't expect it, but it's all down to Lily and Ken. And I think they make her those virtues that you can think as rather wet or rather passive.
Yes, it never comes
kindness,
across as twee, does it? It's...
Not at all saccharine. Lily is so genuine, and I don't mean that genuine in a saccharine way. She is so unaffected and true and authentic. And really has a strength of determination of character and resilience that comes through. She's a really brilliant advert for what you know, a very simple message that could be cloying, just be kind and be courageous.
Yes.
And it makes those qualities dynamic. If we were all kind and courageous, how different would the world be?
Very true. And it's her goodness is charismatic, actually. That's, I think, the key to
she
the film.
She actively loves. And loving, I think we often forget, is a verb, to love.
Yes,
someone.
Yes.
And she nurtures, and she also has a sense of fun. She's dynamic. It's not because she's got, people have been criticising because of her thin waist. It isn't. Her Cinderella as a character, Ella, is genuinely, the prince falls for her because of her character, not
yes.
because of what she looks like or because she's got a 19-inch waist, which, by the way, Lily has naturally. Yeah.
This interview is going out on Classic FM, so the clue's very much in the title. I'd like to ask you about classical music and whether it plays any part in your life.
I love classical music. In fact, I often listen to Classic FM. It's often the soundtrack to my life, my daily life, and because I find it really genuinely de-stresses, and I feel it's it can be a genuine healthy drug.
Yes, I can understand that.
Yes.
I fully understand that. I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have favourite composers? Is there a composer that you go back to again and again?
I mean, I have lots of music. I have no memory, unfortunately, but that's why I should listen to more music. Probably it'll stimulate more neurons. actually, when I was pregnant, and in fact, I did the same thing for when I was learning a language, French, I did this thing called the Tomatis method, which basically played Mozart and violin concertos, because they, again and again, because it stimulated the inner ear of the unborn baby.
Fascinating.
And everything that they promised happened to both my children. They came out alert. It's unbelievably clever and very relaxed, and I think there is something to do with high frequency violins and high frequency music that can wake you up. So Mozart's great for waking me up, and Bach, you know, sort of preludes, piano preludes, for just getting a sense of equilibrium. I love a good musical, but that's not necessarily classical. I love Patrick Doyle's music. Without
yes, indeed, plum, you know, and a great score for Cinderella.
Cinderella is so romantic, but without being, it's old-fashioned in the best sense. He's so great at finding a simple melody. I love lots of composers, actually, film composers.
So fairly eclectic tastes.
Yes, completely eclectic. I go to Edith Piaf to, I like the Lumineers now, and all sorts of, I don't know, I never remember who I like, but I love a tune.
Helena, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Charlotte Green's Culture Club on Classic FM.
I'm Charlotte Green, and recently I had the great pleasure of meeting Kenneth Branagh to discuss his latest film, Cinderella. I've admired his work for a long time, so it wasn't exactly a difficult assignment. I was keen to find out what his initial thoughts were when he was asked to direct the fairy tale movie.
Well, it seemed to me, my instinct was that a classical approach was what I wanted to explore, that I thought in a classical world where you might expect a certain kind of architecture and a certain kind of view of nature and everything from somewhere around the 19th century, that would visually be what I'd want to do, but that inside it I'd like the characterizations to feel very modern, and particularly I wanted to feel that Cinderella was not passive, was not a victim, but was not also turned into a man or bearing a bow and arrow or a spear or being anything other than who she is, but that her spiritual journey in it, if you want to put it that way, would be subtle but important, and in the end nobody would confuse her kindness with weakness.
Yes, that's a very good point. I like the fact that she's resilient and she has inner resources, and I think that came across very clearly. In no way, there's not any kind of saccharine quality about her. She's not twee at all.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear you say it, because I think resilience is a good word. Her mother says, have courage and be kind, and she does demonstrate those things. I remember quoting King Lear, a play that has certain structural resonance with the Cinderella story, where a character says, have patience and endure. And although it seems a little inglorious and perhaps a little prosaic for some people, sometimes that's what we need to do to get through life. And Cinderella has that, but with a twinkle in her eye, she brings in Lily James's performance. She brings great humour to bear. And so that process of being in the moment and getting on as best you can with what you need to get on with, sometimes suffering indignities along the way or the world's indifference, is nevertheless a pretty handy policy.
And you seem to me to achieve a really good balance between the fairy tale magic, or elements of the fairy tale magic, and the human story. Again, I felt that came across quite clearly when I was watching it.
Well, again, I'm pleased to hear you say the magic is contained, if you like, one single visit from our brilliant fairy godmother, yes. Helena Bonham Carter, and it's a funny visit. But the rest of the time, we try and allow for transformation in other ways, you know. And I what I'm pleased about, and it's a tribute to the performances, is that the characters do go on an evolving journey through the piece. They are changed by the events of it. They don't come in as an unchanging single note or quality. So even Kate Blanchett's brilliant stepmother, who comes in devouring the household in these extraordinary dresses that she sort of chews the house up with, in a way, she's like an incredibly glamorous old-fashioned movie star. And she relishes her wickedness and her cruelty. She also opens the door on her heart later on, does not plead for sympathy, but does reveal a history that has you understand, perhaps, where she comes from. And that kind of dynamic, I think it's always a surprise in fairy tales if you can feel a recognition and an understanding of the characters inside a world that is heightened and in magical. But when the two things operate in that way, I think the experience can be quite rewarding.
She reveals a vulnerability. I think there's a very telling point where she's looking through a glass door window, and Ella and her father have this very close relationship and are saying how much they miss Ella's mother and his wife. And it's poignant, and you see the vulnerability behind that cruelty.
Yes, you see
it. And you understand why she behaves the way she does.
Yeah, there's a wound inflicted there, and it's one I think a lot of people have sympathy with. We live in a world of patchwork families. Many people have to make these rearrangements, and love is at the centre of it, but it isn't always simple in what follows when it comes to people outside that central pair. And so you see it here, and it's casually overheard, and like all great drama, these sort of these moments where if she hadn't been there at that moment, maybe things would have been different. Maybe it would have been nicer for Cinderella ultimately. But I do think that capacity to let the movie have a moment like that, and for those actors to sort of fill it in with that kind of subtle detail, makes for such a difference.
Yes.
Another lovely extract from the new Disney film Cinderella on Classic FM. That was Courage and Kindness, the main message behind the film. We heard the London Symphony Orchestra, and the composer was Patrick Doyle, who we'll hear more about soon with Kenneth Branagh. But first, I wanted to know, as the director, to what extent he was involved in the casting of the film.
Inevitably, all the way through. So when I arrived on the picture, there had been quite a search for a Cinderella, but we embarked on another one. We had a brilliant casting director in Lucy Bevan, and she first saw everyone, it seemed, who might even possibly be right for the role, and then started to whittle things down. I heard Lily James's voice and felt that this was already a very key element to her expressiveness, to her musicality, to her warmth, and so it proved. And over a long process of auditioning, she also, in that very process, showed a patience and a playfulness that meant that she would not, it seemed to me, be thrown by the responsibility of playing Disney's Cinderella. She continued to listen and to have a sense of fun about it. We need to be having fun when we're in Cinderella's company.
That comes across very strongly. I felt the whole cast actually were having a lot of fun.
There was a great camaraderie, you know, and a great rapport. A number of things were due to this. Kate Blanchett, for instance, was wonderfully generous to Lily James, to Holiday Granger and Sophie McShearer, who played the stepsisters, and so was Helena. And they did it quite effortlessly and non-patronizingly, and they were absolutely treating them as equals, as they would say, well, of course I would. But it made a big difference. In the same way, Richard Madden and Derek Jacobi had a tremendous rapport for this very subtle relationship between father and son that mirrors the women's story. And I think, again, the respect paid by the senior members of the cast, Derek, Stellan Skarsgård, to these, you know, brilliant young newcomers who were also respectful but eager to sort of step up to the mark and prove themselves with these great actors, was very, very, a very positive energy in the film.
I'd like to talk about Patrick Doyle, because I know the composer, because I know you've got a long-standing working relationship with him. He's also been a guest on the Culture Club on Classic FM, and he's a great character.
He certainly is.
And I loved the music. I just thought it was absolutely right for the film. I thought it was tremendous. How do you go about collaborating with him? Because I obviously, ideally, it is a collaborative process, isn't it?
For sure. Early is how you go about it. You really start early, and because Pat and I are very good friends, have known each other a long time now. The conversation, when I know that a movie may be on the horizon, I let him know very early on, and he's always keen to have an initial conversation, just to have a sense. And this might be 18 months before we go near a recording stage. He'll always visit the set, often come to rehearsals, get to know the actors a bit. He knows that performances are so key to me that he wants to get a sense of who they are and how they speak about their characters. When there are practical considerations like the requirement of music in advance for the waltz that features in the film, so we would need playback on set when shooting, so he's writing a tune and an arrangement that he might be writing maybe 6 months before he would normally do so. That's quite a big commitment in advance to what a central theme of the movie might be. So that early collaboration's key.
Now, I was lucky enough to see you as Henry V and also all the Renaissance Theatre Company productions, which I loved because they were so fresh and vivid.
Thank you.
Can we look forward to seeing you on the stage again before long?
Yes, you can, and we'll soon be talking about exactly the where and why of that. But yes, in the coming autumn of the year, I'll be back on stage and in London's West End, and hopefully collaborating with Pat again. And I think we have exciting times ahead, I think.
I shall really look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thanks again for downloading the podcast. I'll be taking a break next Sunday to make way for the 2015 Hall of Fame countdown. But make sure you join Classic FM over the Easter weekend, because it's going to be full of your favourite music.